Hi, my name is Jennifer. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic and anorexic. Hi. Okay, so my experience, strength, and hope. So I will be celebrating 11 years of abstinence on March 25th in a couple of weeks, God willing. Thank you. And my path in OA actually started through another 12-step program. Almost 17 years ago. And I found for me that food was actually my first addiction because it was the easiest thing I could get my hands on. And there is, as a kid, I was, my parents didn't allow a lot of sugar in the house. Like if sugar was in the top five ingredients, I wasn't allowed to have the food. So at a very early age, when we went out to dinner, my brother and I would steal sugar packets from the table, and I would put them in the phone jack in my room. I'd unscrew the phone, and I would stockpile sugar packets. And then one year, my mom decided to get us phones for Christmas. So they went to have them installed, and she told us that she felt like there was a drug bust in the house because there was all of these sugar packets stuffed in the wall. So for me, food was clearly a drug. And I suffer from every aspect of this disease. I'm a compulsive overeater, I'm a bulimic, I'm an anorexic, I'm a laxative abuser, I'm a diet pill abuser, I'm an over-exerciser. And I basically did whatever I had to do. I went to any length, basically, to control my body. And I specifically remember the first time I purged, so the sugar abuse started first. And then I specifically remember purging because I was a teenager and then got really concerned about my vanity and the consequences of overeating. So I remember the very first time that I purged, and it wasn't a binge that I purged. It was like I ate something I didn't want to be eating, and so I purged. And the purging then escalated to a friend of mine down the street, we thought it was like fun to do together. So it became an activity. So we would literally come home from school and we would go to one of our houses, like whoever, she usually had the better food because I had no food in the house with sugar in the top five ingredients. So we would go to her house and we would binge, and then we would go to different bathrooms and we would purge. And I remember even at that time, like she would be like done purging and she would see me still purging. She was like, oh my God, stop. Like I couldn't even stop like the really violent purging of like hurting myself. And somebody told me when I came into program that was a bulimic. It's like bulimia is like the most violent part of this disease. And it's true. It's like it was just violence turned towards myself. And from the bulimia, then I started taking the diet pill. So then I would starve all day, come home, binge, purge, and then I got into over-exercising. And there was a particular 90s video out at the time that had like three different workouts on it, and I would do all three of them all night long. So it was like it became a cycle of starve all day on diet pills. Oh, and then I think I was taking something to speed up my metabolism. And then I would come home and binge and purge, and then I would do all three videos on this exercise tape until I would go to bed. And then I would get up and I would do the same thing over again. So very early on, my eating disorder became an activity. It was like what I did for fun. And it continued until I found cocaine. Then when I found cocaine, I thought, this is the answer to my eating disorder. If I can just do cocaine for the rest of my life and never eat and never be hungry, like, this is perfect. And so, again, the insanity of, like, step one that our lives, like, me even thinking that that was the solution is insane. So that continued for several years. I started using cocaine when I was, like, a sophomore in high school. In secret, so like the shame of the drug abuse was also set on very early on, because I lived in a very yuppie like East Coast neighborhood out of DC, and the whole idea of being a cocaine addict and having a severe eating disorder was extremely shameful. But the reality is I was more ashamed of my eating disorder than telling people I was doing cocaine in the bathroom. So that's how deep this disease goes for me in terms of my my shame. So I continued abusing drugs until I was about 20, and I ended up in rehab. And I just remember as soon as the drugs got taken away, then the eating disorder was like insanity again in rehab. And I was like limiting myself to eating basically Jell-O and coffee, Jell-O and coffee. So that continued for a while. And anyone working more than one program, my experience is I just had to do one thing at a time. Like, yes, I was not, my cocaine use escalated to actually smoking crack downtown with the 18th Street gang, but I had to basically work these programs in the order that it was killing me. So smoking crack in downtown LA was worse to me than throwing up, so that had to get handled first. But for years, I developed through my sobriety over working that program for many years was an arrogance that I got this. Like, I know how this program works. I can do this. I'm going to get abstinent basically through osmosis by doing step work in this program, and maybe I should go to an OA meeting. But I did not come in, I was not willing to come into this program until I had like 7 years in another program. And when I got here, it was out of the suggestion of my AA sponsor, because she didn't have experience, and she said, just go get a sponsor. Just go to a meeting and get a sponsor, because I was really hung up on like finding the perfect sponsor. And the reality is, like, I just needed to get my ass in these rooms and like work this program. Thank you. And work this program. So I did, and I got here, and I picked a sponsor, and it didn't work out. And that was fine, you know. I would come to meetings, and I would leave and binge and purge. I didn't get it right away, and I tried to start working the steps. And I, like I said, I found a sponsor, but it wasn't the right fit. I probably had her for a couple of months. And then I found another sponsor who, up until just recently, has been my sponsor. And the reason I chose her as my sponsor is, and I'm not joking, she was sharing about not being able to stop eating frozen yogurt. And like at the time, that's what I identified with. It had nothing to do with her spiritual or emotional recovery. I just wanted to stop eating frozen yogurt every day of my life. Because by the time I got here, that's what it was down to. Frozen yogurt, steamed vegetables, and protein bars. Like, that was it. So I, and like secrecy around it. Like, I would have my husband like go to the other frozen yogurt place to get me more frozen yogurt, because I was embarrassed because I was there like earlier in the day. So stop eating frozen yogurt was like really attractive to me. So I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and she said, absolutely, like, I can work the steps with you. And when I worked with her to help identify like what my abstinence would be, my suggestion was, I want to stop throwing up, stop starving, stop over-exercising, stop taking diet pills, and stop using laxatives. And her strong suggestion was like, yeah, we're not going to do all of that. We're going to pick one thing that's your bottom line, which was, for me, at the end of the day, I'm a hardcore bulimic. Like, that was like that was kind of the thing that took over. And so we made my abstinence no throwing up. Until this day, my abstinence is no throwing up. As a result of working the steps, around the fourth step, I gave up the diet pills, I gave up the laxatives, I gave up the over-exercising, and it was an organic process. I never said, I'm going to put these things on my abstinence list so I stop doing them. Like, that never worked for me to just say, like, it didn't work before, it wasn't going to work now. So I started working the steps, and the other kind of suggestion that she gave, suggestion slash agreement, and this is still a tool I use when I sponsor people, is she asked me, what are you willing to do to bring to the relationship? Because a sponsor-sponsee relationship is a relationship. So I had to say, I'm willing to be honest, I'm willing to do this, I'm willing to do that. And part of her end of the deal was, Before you purge, you need to get someone on the phone. You can't leave a message. You have to talk to somebody. So if you get a fellow on the phone or somebody on the phone and you talk to them and you tell them what's going on and that you want to purge and you hang up the phone and you still have to go purge, then God has not removed the obsession. So it was instilled in me very early on that it wasn't up to me to make my behavior stop. And I agreed. So I agreed that entering this relationship, that would be part of my side of the deal. And I kept it. So there were occasions where I would eat 7 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and I had to sit with it. And anybody that has experience as a bulimic, that's really fucking uncomfortable. Like, forget a feeling, 7 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches is really uncomfortable. And the other side of it was I had to be honest about what I was doing with the food. So if I did eat 7 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and then take laxatives, for instance, because I couldn't throw it up, I had to call her and say, just letting you know, I took 7 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and I took 5 laxatives. And she would call me back and say, thanks for sharing. And there was no conversation about why did you eat the 7 peanut. Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, we're compulsive overeaters. We don't like to be uncomfortable, so that's what we do. And still till this day, when I have sponsees tell me, like, I overate this meal, and it doesn't matter why. Like, it's what we do, you know? So there was no overanalyzing of, like, why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because it even says in our literature, like, self-knowledge avails us nothing. It doesn't matter. I had to get comfortable with being honest and not purging. So I did. And by doing the fourth step was, like, another layer of, like, getting honest. And for me, my experience, like, I feel like a lot of people are afraid of the fourth step. For me, it's not, the fourth step wasn't as scary as, like, the ninth step, for instance. But there were things that I was ashamed of in my fourth step. And by giving them away was, like, another, it was a way of getting honest, but I also remember my experience was really, like, I felt like they say in here, like, we become one of many. I felt like one of many because I was either much better than everybody else. And by admitting my faults to somebody else, I became human. Like, I just became another human being who has done the best I can in life imperfectly. And so that was like a big deal for me because it kind of, like, brought me down to, like, being right-sized. And then also making my amends was, like, another level of humility. Because when you go to somebody and you can admit you're wrong, and I didn't have to, and I was also told, don't over-explain why you did what you did. Like, when you make amends and you acknowledge your character defect, and then that's it. You leave it. So there were girls that I beat up in high school. I was a bully. That I had to call and basically say, I'm really sorry I physically harmed you. I'm sorry I smashed the windows of your car. I'm sorry I fucked up your house and, like, whatever else I did to them. But I was suffering from really low self-esteem and doing blah, 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 blah. And I had to, like, leave it. And you know what? It was uncomfortable. Like, it was really fucking uncomfortable for me to have to admit I harmed somebody else. It was because of my character defects. And hear what they had to say. And there was one girl that said, yeah, you really ruined my high school experience. Like, people look back on high school and have good memories. I have horrible memories because of you. And you know what? Like, that's what happened. You know what I mean? And I can't change it. And again, it was like a humbling experience for me to take responsibility for my actions and the repercussions. So my experience of working the steps was worked for anybody that's struggling. It worked. I no longer purge. I no longer starve. I no longer take laxatives. I no longer overexercise. I no longer abuse diet pills. And like I said, my abstinence is still no throwing up. Like, it just, as a result of this program, I think what happened is I gained self-esteem, right? So all the things that made me feel horrible about myself, recovery has just been a path of, like, gaining self-esteem, of feeling better about myself. And as I have felt better about myself, I'm less likely to abuse myself. And what I realized for me is whatever addiction it is, it's just me harming myself. Whether it's, I mean, and look, I'm in two programs, I've visited a third, I could probably qualify for four or five, quite honestly. So it's like being a sober, abstinent, like debt-free person, there's not so many vices anymore. And the reality is, like, there's times I overeat. Like, there are times when I want to comfort myself emotionally, so I eat food, extra food. And you know what? It's better than smoking crack. And it's better than, like, whatever else it could be. Like, at the end of the day, a cupcake is not going to kill me. It may make me uncomfortable. But I've become willing with this program to not be so black and white. And that's what it had to be for me. I couldn't be so hard. My disease is about being rigid and harsh and know this and only this many calories and you must work. So for me, it was about becoming more gentle with myself. And so even when I sponsor and sponsees call me and say, I did this and I ate too much popcorn, I think I should put popcorn on my abstinence list. It's like, that's not how I was sponsored, so I don't sponsor that way. And that's just my experience, is that just by saying I'm gonna stop doing this now, it's gonna go away. And so my path to recovery, like I said, has been about like gaining self-esteem and loving myself and not harming myself or doing things that harm myself. So today, at almost 11 years abstinent, my program is not what it looked like in the beginning. So I am a full-time working mother of a 3-year-old child, which doesn't leave a lot of room for like meditation and meetings and sponsoring and all of that kind of stuff. I do the best I can. But I do not have the luxury of self-care that I had when I first came in here. So as a result, I'm uncomfortable a lot of times. And there's not a lot of room for my feelings. Like, I need to, it's almost like I'm saying this, but I don't do it. It's like I have to schedule time to feel my feelings, because I've got to either take care of somebody else or have it together or go to work or whatever it may be. But just very, 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 very recently, I have found a way of meditating that works for me. And it's not sitting still in the morning and reading the first three steps and asking God's will for me. It's just not. I feel like for a long time in my recovery, I feel like that's what it should look like. And that doesn't work for me. So I have found ways of meditation that do work. Recently I've gotten really into one practice, and I also simultaneously have had people say to me, you look really thin, what are you doing? And I'm not doing anything, but there's, I believe, a correlation between my more intense meditation practice and letting go of weight. And the one thing that like comes up for me, like when I kind of don't even want to figure it out, because when I figure it out, I'm then in my head and trying to figure out the magic of this program. But I just, again, doing this practice, I have become less willing to hurt myself. Like, I feel stronger, like in my, as a person, and in asking for what I want. There's a lot of that in my work situation, where I used to let people like walk all over me. I'm more willing to like stand up for myself and ask for my needs to be met without fear of like losing my job. And there's also, when I do feel uncomfortable, I'm not reaching for the extra food, even though I'm still absent, to take the edge off. So I feel like my body is stronger, and I've like let go of a lot of the the stuff that I feel I need to be protected, because I feel like I'm really in my body and I'm really comfortable. So I'm not currently working on a step, but I am working to maintain my spiritual connection with a higher power. I still sponsor, so there's still a connection to program. I make outreach calls. There are a handful of people that wouldn't even fill one hand that I completely trust to tell what's going on in my life. And that's the other thing I know I need to stay abstinent, is there needs to be at least a couple of people that I trust that I can be completely honest with, and that can be honest with me, and where I don't feel judged, because if I feel like I'm going to be judged, I'm just not going to go there. And I have found that through these rooms. I have found fellows that are not judgmental, that have experienced what I am going through, and that I can be completely honest with. So I'm almost at 9:15, so I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own, not of those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. And we are being recorded. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. And we'll stop at 9:35. Yeah.
Thank you for your sharing.
Thank you.
What was the significant voice you heard that made you adhere to this program after you've been in it for a while and really healed it well?
What is the voice that I heard?
Significant voice that you heard, which changed the road you were on to adhere to this program as it's written.
So, what was the significant voice I've heard to make me continue on this path, basically?
Spiritual, verbal, whatever.
My life is not supposed to look like this. So, the overwhelming thought that I kept hearing was, I don't know how I got here. My life is not supposed to look like this. I can't continue my life like this. I don't know what this path leads, but I can't go on like I'm going on. And that was the resounding feeling, thought, voice that I heard to make me continue on a 12-step path. Sure.
Thank you for sharing. What has been your experience with step three? What's your concept of the higher power and how do you exit it?
So what is my experience with step three? What's my concept of a higher power and how do I exercise it?
Access it.
Okay. So my experience with step three was, again, similar to what I just said. It was like my life cannot continue like this. And I had no problem admitting that my life was unmanageable, that I couldn't manage food. And I was really well aware that I needed help at that point. And that was also one of the most humbling experiences that I had with step three, because I'm really independent. And I thought, if I can stop smoking crack, for God's sakes, I can deal with food. Like, that was my mentality. And again, it was like another level of humility that I had to get to say, I can't, God can, and I'm going to turn this over to a higher power because I have completely fucked my life up. I also, in step three, my sponsor had me write what my higher power is. Like, I had to write it out because essentially my experience and what she shared with me and what I have sponsees do is, I'm not going to turn my life over to something that I don't know what it is. I need to have some concept of my higher power to be willing to turn my life over to it. So my higher power always wants what's best for me. My higher power always has my back. My higher power is always there when I need it. If I can't access it, it's because I've gone away, but my higher power is always there. I may not be willing. I mean, I've had an experience recently where it's like, I am engaging in something that feels good, that I know is not right, but it feels good, and I don't want to stop. And I know that if I pray for God to, like, help me out with this, it'll go away. But then I won't have the, like, sensation, the buzz anymore. So I'm really well aware that my higher power is there when I need help. And how do I access my higher power? Through meditation, through my meditation that works for me recently. And usually that means getting quiet. Like, I have to get quiet. Even though my meditation practice is about movement, it makes me get quiet and go inward. And also other people. Like, those few people on the one hand, like I said, that I can trust, That's also how I access my higher powers, hearing it through other people. And I'm also big on, like, God is everywhere. Like, it may not be a person, but if I can be in the present, which means not in the food and obsessing about the future or the past, if I'm in the present, it may not be a person, but it may be a thing, it might be, that will reveal to me or give me some sort of serenity around whatever I'm seeking God's help with. So,
thank
you. You're welcome.
So much. Would you be willing to share the meditation that you practice?
Would I be willing to share the meditation that I practice? Running and yoga. and the reality, and it's not complex. And again, what I had to realize what worked for me. And sitting still doesn't work for me. And the reality is that it wasn't until recently that I looked at them as meditation and not exercise. And through my yoga practice, I only recently, because I had been feeling discomfort, was I willing to, like, go deeper. So I started doing more research about it. And as I started to do more research about it, the spiritual practice, like, became linked. And I always knew that I wasn't, like, a sit still and meditate kind of person. And I felt bad about that for years. And I felt like I was doing it wrong. So I just didn't do it. But as I have continued to do research about deepening my yoga practice and even running for me, it's about doing a motion over and over and over again that gets me out of my head. So it's like a... for me, it just takes me out of my head and gets me into my body. And anywhere where I can get out of my head and into my body becomes meditative for me. And there's, they each do something different. When I run, it's like I clear my head. Like I get like a clearance of whatever my mind is doing. And then for me with yoga, it's about an inward turn. So I can, focus. And I get a sense of peace. So there's a different result from each one, but it doesn't involve getting on my knees and praying, and it doesn't involve reading 12 steps, but it does require motion for me and awareness. So that's what works for me. Sure.
Thank you so much. What do you do, or how do you address the nasty conversations that come up in your head, and how do you deal with the sort of negative thinking or any negative thinking that happens? Do you have any experience in that?
Sure. So how do I deal with the negative thinking or thoughts or conversations in my head? Really simple, and someone told me this, is when it starts, the tape starts, I just say, God, please remove all negative thoughts, and please remove all negative thoughts that do not serve me. And it's a mantra. It's like, and it clicks. It's like I start having it, and then I just say, God, it's like I don't get on my knees, but it's a conversation that I have. Like, just make it, I can't make it stop. I've tried. So it's just a simple conversation with God to please make it stop. And it's important also for the thoughts that don't serve me as much as the negative thoughts. So.
I heard you say the word what do you do these days when you're feeling uncomfortable?
So what do I do when I'm feeling uncomfortable? I think that, and I had to learn this through program, is that this program isn't about being comfortable all the time. It's about being willing to be uncomfortable. So sometimes when I'm uncomfortable, there's nothing to do. I'm just uncomfortable. And I needed to get willing to sit through being uncomfortable. And that was a big lesson for me when I was around 4 years abstinent. There was my best friend moved out of the city, my grandmother died, my aunt died, all in like a period of like a month. Like it was like a crazy grief time. And I remember being, I went back east to where my family was, because my, or I'm sorry, it was my grandfather. I had gone to visit my grandfather who was like on his deathbed one day, and the next day went to go visit my aunt who was at home with hospice care dying of cancer. And I went back to the hotel, and in the middle of it, I was sharing a hotel room with my brother, and I went in the bathroom and was sobbing like I have never sobbed before. And I just remember sitting in the bathroom, and I was like talking to myself, and I remember literally saying to myself, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do. And it was in that, I feel like I'm gonna cry, but it was in that moment that I heard this voice, it's, there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. Like, you're just grieving, and you're just uncomfortable. And that has been a really powerful lesson for me, is that there's sometimes nothing to do but ride out feeling uncomfortable. and it passes. Like, the uncomfortable feelings pass. Like, and I was saying recently, it's like I've had uncomfortable feelings, and somebody just said to me, she's like, yeah, you're normal, it'll pass. But there's nothing to do about it, you know? I mean, like I said, I could maybe pray and get some relief or whatever, but yeah, I mean, besides talking to somebody or, you know, just being honest about what's going on with me, it's more about just being willing to sit through being uncomfortable. Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have any trigger foods that you abstain from.
Sure. Do I have any trigger foods that I abstain from? No, but there are certain times when I know eating sugar is not a good idea. I'm really clear when I'm using it and when I'm enjoying a meal with friends or family or whatever. There were times when, for instance, there was a time like last summer, I have a young son and he wanted to go eat ice cream. And I was frustrated that I couldn't just go eat ice cream with my son on a summer day. But I was really clear that I would use it like a drug. And then the other, just last weekend at 11:30 in the morning, he said, I want ice cream. And I said, okay, let's go. and it was fine, you know? And if I wasn't in a good place spiritually, that would have been a really big problem. But, my abstinence is not about like eliminating foods, but having the awareness, because I come from a restrictive background. So it's not that I have certain foods on my abstinence list, but I know I have enough self-awareness to know that it's a good idea. There are certain times it's a good idea, and there are certain times that there are not. Sure. Yeah. Sure. So bulimia being a really violent act, you're curious if I had a lot of anger tied into to doing it. Absolutely. When I stopped purging, I remember specifically an experience, and it was a normal everyday experience. Something happened with my car insurance. Like, I thought I had insurance, but I wasn't covered, and nothing happened. It's not like I was in an accident or something like that, but I found out that, like, I thought I had insurance and I didn't. And I had a tantrum like a two-year-old child, banging the pillows, screaming on my bed, like I lost it. And I believe because I didn't turn the anger in towards myself by purging, that I didn't know how, I had no idea of how to deal with the feeling of anger. I didn't learn skills about how to deal with anger. So the way it came out was like a child being angry, because they say it in here too. It's like we stop emotionally developing at some point because we start using food. So the way I processed anger at the beginning of my abstinence was like a two-year-old child. I would have a tantrum, and I would scream, and I would cry. And that kind of expression of anger happened on more than one occasion. Like, it happened multiple times. Whereas now, I can experience anger without having a tantrum, and usually it helps alleviate it when I can go physically exert myself, you know, to like get the energy out. But absolutely, anger was by being a bulimic, anger was a feeling I never learned how to process, and I've had to learn how to process in these rooms.
Hi. As a mother, do you ever get into moments of like self-pity or overwhelming? And if you do, what do you do to just stay present with your family and just like come from a place of love?
Good question. So as a mother, how do I stay present and come from a place of love when I'm overwhelmed? And I'm overwhelmed a lot. God, and this is like why I'm so uncomfortable these days. So I'm overwhelmed a lot because there was this, I was raised with a mother that always had it together and everything was fine and everything was fine. And really my father was like having affairs for 20 years and that we were like having financial problems. So my role model of a mother, and I love my mother, was like, keep it together, keep it together, keep it together. And my experience of being a mother and wanting to be an example for my child of how to process feelings is I've had to become comfortable crying in front of my son. And and I have another friend who's in this program who is also a mother. And it's like, what's acceptable? Like, what level of emotion is acceptable? Because I don't want to lose my shit in front of my son like a crazy person. But I've had to become comfortable with crying in front of my son, which has happened several times. Two weekends ago, something happened and we were at a birthday party and my three-year-old son fell in the duck pond. And leading up to this, I was overwhelmed. I had just gotten back from a business trip, came home and felt like had all the feelings, honestly, of feeling trapped as a mother because I can't get up and go to meetings when I want. I can't go to the beach when I want. I can't go on a hike when I want. There's a lot of things I can't do when I want anymore. And I was feeling trapped, resentful, shameful that I feel this way. So then this incident happened and we got in the car and I just started crying. And my son said to me, Mama, are you crying? And I said, yeah, I'm crying. And I want to be an example that you can have feelings and that life isn't always fine. And I made outreach calls about the way I was feeling. I've been honest about the way I was feeling. There's a woman that I've reached out to that is 26 years in program who was in the exact same situation that I've been, who've had the exact same feelings that I feel. And she just suggested, like, you need to do a fourth step on this. Like, I didn't even put the two together that I was actually resentful, to be honest. I was just so in my feelings of, like, overwhelmed. I feel trapped. I feel ashamed that the idea that I even had a resentment even felt shameful because I wanted this. This is the life that I wanted, and this is how I feel. Why aren't I? And it's because of program on top of it. So I had to also get really comfortable with, like, I'm not going to be in fucking gratitude all the time, you know? And it kind of goes back to, like, being uncomfortable. Like, I have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And even though I have this, like, big, beautiful life that we get as a result of program, sometimes it's not great, and that's okay. Like, there's sometimes I'm not grateful. I feel like there's this false sense of reality sometimes when we come in here that, like, I'm great. Because I'm abstinent, life is great. And for me, it's just not the reality. Because I'm abstinent, I get to experience, like, a whole rainbow of feelings. And just because I'm feeling bad, it doesn't mean that, like, I got to get rid of the feeling now. And I think that's, again, kind of like something I really had to learn was, like, okay, you feel trapped, you feel ashamed, you feel resentful, and you can do a fourth step on this. And this is also something I shared with someone, and they said, it'll pass. Like, it will pass. And you're right, it's hard when you have a child and a marriage and a job where everybody needs you all the time. So it's a lot about being honest, being willing to feel my feelings, do the work around it, do the writing, and knowing that it's going to pass. So, we have a few minutes. Anyone? Bueller? Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
You talked about your service about the
meeting
level.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could
Yes. My service above a meeting level is not a lot. My service is in sponsorship. And sponsorship, and a lot of times it's, there are occasions when I will take the newcomer's number at a meeting, and call the newcomer after a meeting, or stop the person who was quiet but crying in the corner the entire meeting, making it a point to reach out to them after the meeting and just say, what's going on? Also, I feel like my service goes beyond a 12-step program. Like, for me to be a loving wife and mother, I need to enter it with the attitude of service. So for me, I've had to expand what I've learned in a 12-step program into my life so that my life can work. So I have to be of service to my son. I need to be of service to my family. I need to be of service at work. When I'm feeling pissed off at work, when my ego gets hurt at work, which it does a lot, I have to check myself and go back to, like, you're one of many. You're here to be of service. So the idea of being of service for me, outside of being a meeting directly related to 12-step program, is about sponsorship and calling the newcomer. And then I've had to find other ways of being of service in my life to kind of keep that mentality. We have like 1 minute.
No one else. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there foods in the house that you are triggered by that you have to have anyway because your child is having you?
Great question. Okay, as a mother, do I keep all foods in my house? Yes. I can eat one cookie today. I don't know how and I don't know why, but like there are days when I eat one cookie and I'm done. Or I eat three tiny pieces of chocolate when I want something sweet and I'm done. And I don't, again, it's not me. I think it goes back to, again, the idea that, like, I don't want to harm myself. So the answer is yes. Okay, so it's 9:35. Now is the time for second stuff.